Now, I must admit that I'm generally a bit of a Scrooge when it comes to carols. And I was talking to Gordon earlier about this briefly. And I find they become so familiar that I forget what I'm really singing. And Gordon mentioned this earlier. But when I reread some of the words of these carols earlier this week, I was surprised by the depth of their lyrics. I'm just going to read the first verse of our first carol, Joy to the World. I'll pop it on the screen as well. Joy to the world, the Lord has come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room, and heaven and nature sing. So our first carol is Joy to the World. It's number 393 if you want to read it in the books, but the words will be on the screen as well. So number 393, Joy to the World. Now, this is the bit you've probably been looking forward to, especially if you're under the age of 10. So, has anybody been given a present today that they would be happy to share with us or to show us or to talk about? Anybody? Come on, there must. So, none of you had presents today. Oh, I'm not sure if I quite believe that. Go on then, Arlo. Oh, what? Sorry? Oh, wow. What kind of watch? Can you show it to us? Is it a smartwatch? Oh, very good. Can everybody see Arlo's watch there? Oh, fantastic. All right. Does it just tell the time, or does it do pretty much everything else? Oh, very good. Very good, Colin. I'm going to share with you a little insight into the McNeish household this morning. So this is what I got for Christmas this morning. Oh, yes. I mean, if you're not impressed with that, then I don't know what you will be impressed with. Colin, it is a fantastic pair of running shoes in black. I mean, these are not any pair of running shoes. They are the pair of running shoes. So I hope you're impressed. But, you know, I mean, what could a woman want? You know, my wife, I thought, well, what should I get her for Christmas? Maybe jewelry, maybe some nice clothes. I know what she needs. That's what it is. The yellow version of the shoes I got. I mean, I know how to treat a lady. I mean, what more does any woman need in her life than a pair of yellow running shoes, of course. Okay, so we're now going to have our reading from Matthew chapter 1, verse 18 to 25, and Kathy has kindly agreed to read it for us.
The birth of Jesus Christ took place in this way. His mother Mary had been promised to Joseph in marriage, but before they were married, Mary realized that she was pregnant by the Holy Spirit. Her husband Joseph was an honorable man and did not want to disgrace her publicly, so he decided to break the marriage agreement with her secretly. Joseph had this in mind when an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream. The angel said to him, "Joseph, descendant of David, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife. She is pregnant by the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you will name him Jesus. He saves, because he will save his people from their sins. All this happened so that what the Lord has spoken through the prophet came true. The virgin will become pregnant and give birth to a son, and they will name him Emmanuel, which means God is with us." When Joseph woke up, he did what the angel of the Lord had commanded him to do. He took Mary to be his wife. He did not have marital relations with her before she gave birth to a son. Joseph named the child Jesus.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Kathy. Okay, so our next song is O Come All Ye Faithful. And if you're using the books, it's number 491. So it's O Come All Ye Faithful. Number 491. So, what's in a name then? I don't know whether you noticed, but in that passage that Kathy read earlier on, there are three names used for Jesus. Now, here Boaz is calling my name. The names given that people give to their children often have a lot of meaning and significance. Similarly, the names used in the Bible for people are often loaded with significance, and in some cases can actually help us understand what God is trying to tell us through his word. Now, I remember when we were naming each of our two boys, I remember thinking long and hard about what we were going to call them and the meaning of those names. For our first son, Boaz, who's very vocal this morning, many of you know him. His name means strength. Now, Boaz is not even 2 years old yet, so you can probably imagine what I was thinking when probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I found him in the garden carrying bricks up and down the garden and throwing them towards the patio. And unfortunately, the other side of the patio are the glass patio doors. Thankfully, they didn't quite reach that far that day. So probably at that point, I was thinking, I wish I'd called him something a little bit calmer or less dangerous. So in the passage, we read about three names for Jesus: Christ, Emmanuel, and Jesus. These three names are absolutely loaded with meaning, and we're going to unpack some of these throughout the service. So the first of all, does anybody know who this lovely lady is? Anybody know? Absolutely. Does anybody know what you're meant to do when you meet the Queen? Is there anything special you're meant to do or say or anything like that? Any ideas? No? Apparently not. Sorry? Curtsy. Yeah. Scott, would you curtsy? No? Oh, fair enough. What would you do, Scott? Oh, you'd probably bow. Right? Fair enough. I think you're meant to call her, is it ma'am or mom or something that rhymes with ham? Oh, I don't know. Whatever. I don't think there'll ever be a danger of me meeting the Queen, so there we go. Yes. In the time when Jesus was born, kings were a lot more powerful than kings and queens today. Probably a prime minister or a president might be a better comparison. This picture made me laugh. One of my colleagues pointed out recently. When this little girl met President Obama, she wasn't very impressed and decided to lay down on the floor and have a temper tantrum instead. I can just about imagine Boaz doing that, actually. And I can imagine sort of what her parents were probably thinking at that point, probably wanting to disappear. So in our passage that Kathy read earlier on, in verse 18, it says this. This is how the birth of Jesus Christ came about. So it calls him Christ. Now, depending on what Bible translation you're reading, it might either use the word Christ or Messiah. And if you have a Bible in front of you, you might be able to see a note down the bottom that explains that the word Christ is basically the Greek version of the Hebrew word Messiah, which means anointed one. In the Old Testament, when kings were made kings or chosen to be kings, they were anointed with oil, which means the oil was poured over their head. Probably a bit of a messy affair. And it was a symbol of them being chosen as a king. Now, in verse 20 of our passage earlier, the angel describes Joseph as being son of David. Now, Matthew, the writer of the book of Matthew, has spent most of the first half of the first chapter describing Joseph's family tree, right from Abraham through to King David, right down to Joseph. So Jesus, as Joseph's adopted son, is legally in the line of King David, the greatest king of Israel. By calling him Christ, or Messiah, or Anointed One, Matthew is telling us that Jesus is the king who had been promised throughout the whole of the Old Testament. Now, the Jews at that time were probably expecting some sort of political leader or a military leader who'd free them from oppression, something like sort of Moses, you know, sort of leading them through the Red Sea, all that kind of stuff. And their enemy at the time was the Romans, so they're probably expecting him to free them from the Romans, lead an uprising or something like that. But Jesus had come to free them from a far greater enemy than the Romans. He had come to free his people from slavery to sin. Sin, the selfish desire that we all have to reject God and say, I want to be my own king. I don't want you, God, to have any place in my life. So how should we respond to this promised king, this Messiah? Matthew gives us two examples in the following chapters that we won't read now. You're probably familiar with them. King Herod, who you might have heard of, he was jealous. He rejected Jesus. He wanted all the power for himself. He tried to kill Jesus. He tried to wipe him out. He tried to make sure that he was forgotten. And then on the other hand, there were the wise men, the magi, the so-called kingmakers of the East. these mysterious men who desperately searched for him. And when they found him, they worshipped him as the true king. Now ask yourself, what is your response to him? Have we ignored him, belittled him, rejected him? Or have you recognized him as the true king? Have you given up desperately holding on to control of your life and giving it over to him, Jesus Christ, the promised king? Because we've got the kids in the service, I'm going to split up the talk over a few little chunks, which you're probably happy about. Keep you all awake. Our next song, then, is number 493, and it's O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. Number 493, if you're using the books. Now that carol has some pretty old-fashioned language in it, but those words, rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel, we'll come back to in a minute. So what's the best way to get to know someone? I see you've noticed my pictures on the board. I'm going to read out some facts about our three of our lovely church elders, and let's see if you can guess who they are based on those facts, all right? So, the first one. He's been canoeing at the National Whitewater Rafting Centre. Can I get a ooh? Oh, not very impressive. Fair enough. He was on a plane that landed in Ascension Island to refuel. Yeah, fair enough. This one's a really exciting one. He broke a spark plug when servicing his car some years ago. There we go. I didn't say they had to be exciting. So, who do you think, out of Alistair, Gordon, Paul, or Martin, that was? Any guesses? Straight away, look at that. It was Paul. Fantastic. Okay, so next up we have, he owns a plot of land in Scotland. His first car was a Ford Escort. He has jumped out of an aeroplane at 3,000 feet. So, Alistair, Gordon, Paul, or Martin? So there's Alistair and, did I hear anybody else there? Gordon or Alistair? It was Gordon. So, yeah, I know that first one was a bit of a red herring, yeah. So the last one then, I won't do all four because otherwise you'll be able to guess the last one. He was once very friendly with Chris Akabusi, MBE. Ooh. He wore short trousers to school until he was 15 years old because his mum wouldn't let him wear long trousers. And he grew up with a former captain of Southampton Football Club. So who was it? Alistair, Gordon, Paul, or Martin? Fantastic. It was Martin, of course. Fantastic. So if someone describes a person to us, we can find out a little about them. But wouldn't a better way to get to know them be to spend time with them, to walk with them, to talk with them, to eat together, to talk to them? Sorry, I've said talk already. Lots of talking. In verse 23 of our passage, it says, the virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. The same words that we had in that song that we just sang. Emmanuel, God with us. Many people, when they think of God, think of a distant, impersonal being. But this name Emmanuel, God with us, blows that myth right out of the water. He was born in a dirty, dark, stinking animal shelter. His parents weren't particularly rich. He grew up in a backwater agricultural town called Nazareth, and he spent his whole life mixing with people from all walks of life, whether it be civil servants, fishermen, soldiers, sinners like you and me, people who are wrapped up in our own selfishness. God is not distant. The historical records in the Bible and elsewhere remind us that this man named Jesus trod the streets of the Middle East 2,000 years ago. He came to us in flesh and blood. In John chapter 1, it says, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. The Greek words used there literally mean he pitched his tent. God is not distant. He lived among us as one of us. Now think about this. There are estimated to be around 1 billion trillion stars in the observable universe. That's around about the same number as the grains of sand on all the beaches on the whole planet. Now, if we move a little bit closer to home, you've all got one of these, hopefully. I've got at least half of one anyway. There are estimated to be around 100 billion nerve cells or neurons in the brain, which can all pass information. If we go even a little bit smaller on the picture, Colin, I've got a picture of a hydrogen atom using a very powerful microscope to take a picture of it. Atoms, the building blocks of everything that's made. They're made up of even smaller particles called protons, neutrons, electrons, which are held together by a force called the strong force. Very, very original. And if you go even smaller, you get things called quarks and gluons. Now, please don't ask me to explain any of this after the service, because I've got to the extent of my science knowledge here, so yeah, stop there. I've forgot most of what I learned at school, to be honest. But think about it. Jesus is God. As it says in John chapter 1, he was there at the beginning. That means he came up with this stuff. And yet, he chose to be born into this world as a baby with one of those brains. God is not far off or distant by any means. In the first chapter of Matthew, we're reminded that Jesus is Emmanuel, that we just read about. Emmanuel, God with us. And in the last chapter of Matthew, Jesus says to his disciples, "Surely I am with you always to the end of the age." So the book of Matthew starts and finishes with reminders that God is with us. So whatever you might feel, God is not distant. Let's have our next song then. It's The First Noel, and it's number 644 if you're using the book. The First Noel, the song will be on the screen. Luckily for Arlo, I have a little present for him, and it's not, well, he can be part of one of my illustrations. Aren't you pleased about that, Arlo? I bet. Can I have another volunteer? Maybe two smaller volunteers as well. Would you mind coming up? Anybody else? Maybe a bigger volunteer. Oh, go on then. Can you come up as well? Now, I want you to take this string. I'm almost all tangled up already. And can you tie up Arlo for me? Penny's getting a bit worried at this point. It's all right. All right, so if I give you the ball of string. Okay, can you tie up Arlo? Not too tight to sort of restrict his blood flow, but tight enough so he can't wriggle out, all right? So go for it. Maybe start with his legs. That might be a good place to start. I'll give you a hand if you like. Go on, then. We need some coaching over here. So anybody got any ideas on any knots? That'd be useful. There we go. So maybe if I just tie you like this. There we go.
Even if it's like that.
Yeah, that'll do. Yeah. Right. Oh, dear. It's been a long time since I've been a Boy Scout. There we go. Let's just tie that nice and tight. Double knot, just to be sure. Don't want you running away anytime soon. Okay, maybe his hands as well. Would you mind if you put your hands up for me? And watch the nice, smart new watch as well. There we go. All right, there we go. Let's wind it up. You know any good knots? Yeah, careful of the watch. Here we go. Okay, so I think that will probably do. I'll just give it a quick... Oh, thank you very much. I'll keep that safe over here. There we go. Does that monitor your activity as well, does it? Okay, let's just tie that off. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, if my volunteers can just stay there. Arlo, can you give me a wriggle? Can you get yourself free? Oh. Right, stop. Yes, you can't get yourself free, can you, Arlo? Well done, there we go. So, if Arlo wasn't so wriggly, what do you think would be a good way of setting him free? Anybody got any ideas? Could he do it on his own if I tied the knots tight enough? Anybody got any ideas?
Scissors.
Daniel? Oh, scissors. What's that? Very clever. Untie the knots. What if the knots are really good? Not like the knots I burnt the string, chainsaw. Well, okay, well, I've got your first suggestion, the scissors. Chainsaw didn't quite meet the health and safety risk assessment.
My brother
has
one too.
Does he? Well, I'm glad you didn't bring it. Would you mind just chopping, not through the trousers, but through the string? Is that all right? I apologize in advance, Penny, if I snip his trousers. Excellent. Thank you very much. Round of applause for my volunteers. Excellent. Thank you very much, Arlo. There's your watch. All in one piece. Thank you. Excellent. Thank you very much. Can I have the scissors? Perfect. Okay. Well done, Arlo. That was excellent. So, we managed to cut him free with the scissors. Now, Psalm 129, verse 4 says this, "But the Lord is righteous. He has cut me free from the cause of the wicked." Now, the writer of that psalm, it was probably talking about a physical enemy that God had helped him escape from. But it's also a brilliant picture of what Jesus has done for us. So in verse 21 of our reading we had earlier on, it says, "She," that is Mary, "will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." The name Jesus is actually a version of oh, crikey. Not Joseph, is it? Joshua. Fantastic. I'm glad I have very knowledgeable people in the audience. The name Jesus means God, or Yahweh will save. We're like Arlo. We're tangled up in the string. We're tangled up in our own selfishness and our sin. In our desire to be free from God, we've actually tied ourselves up in knots. We think we're free, but we're actually trapped. And we can do nothing on our own. Arlo, if I tied the knots tight enough, wouldn't have been able to free himself. He didn't have the scissors. He didn't have someone to cut him free. We can wriggle as much as we like. We can try and live a good life. We can go to church. We can pray. But unless we trust in Jesus to set us free, through his life, through his death, and through his resurrection, we're still tied up, tangled up in our sin. If we spend our lives refusing to take Jesus seriously, and we've all done it, stubbornly doing it our own way, God will reluctantly give us what we want, an eternity forever separated from him. Now that's what I think Paul, the writer in the New Testament, means when he says the wages of sin are death. A life spent rejecting God results in forever separated from him. He will give us what we choose. God is the source of everything that is beautiful and lovely in this world. Therefore, imagine what forever without him means. But God, in his unending love, refuses to let that be. He loved us so much, so deeply, that he stepped in, literally. He sent Jesus, his son. Hebrews chapter 1 says it this way. It describes Jesus as the exact representation of God. God came to us to cut us free from the mess we're in. We could do nothing. We were tangled up in sin. We deserved death and separation from God forever. But he stepped in. Jesus lived the life that we couldn't. He died the death that we deserved. He experienced that separation from God the Father, and then he defeated death and rose to life. Well, what does this mean? This means that we can have hope. Hope that's not grounded in what we've done, but hope that's grounded in what he's done on our behalf. Romans 8 says this, 8 verse 5 says, "But God demonstrates his love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us." He didn't wait until we got it right. He came while we were sinners. Our hope is grounded on that truth. In our passage earlier on, it says, "You are to give him the name Jesus because he will save his people from their sins." Now, I love all the traditions we associate with Christmas. And probably most of all, I love the food, to be honest. But these three names for Jesus, they remind me about the best bits of Christmas. Christ, the promised King. Emmanuel, God with us. Jesus, he will save his people from their sins. Now, if I forget this, then I've really missed the point of what Christmas is about, and it just becomes an empty shell. The incredible news of Christmas is that God himself came to us to save us from that mess, that tangle, that we were unable to save ourselves from. Let's close with a prayer. Lord, thank you for Christmas. Thank you for the wonderful truth that you came to our broken world and have offered us hope. Please help us to never let go of the truth that you, Jesus, are the promised King. You are God with us. You were born to save us from our sins. Amen. Right, as we close, I couldn't really get away without having this carol, really. So we're going to finish off with Hark the Herald Angels Sing, number 211, 211, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. And before we sing that, I just want to say Happy Christmas, have a lovely day, and enjoy the food.